52. The only other person told about the five dots was Trevor, which Carol made a condition of her staying.
Secrecy suited the others.
George wanted time to put equations under this new, even more radical change to physics. Julian wanted nothing to complicate and possibly derail his plans for the project's next steps.
Aiden wanted whatever Julian did.
Trevor, who had much more math than Carol, spent long hours with George.
"I'm just a sounding board for him,"
Trevor told her as he stopped by her room at the end of another long day.
"But George says that's what he needs right now."
"Poor Trevor," Carol had said. "I talk at you about my decision to stay here for another year. George talks at you about physics. And 2 days ago, I overheard you patiently listening to James's latest rant about the carelessness of the techs flinging their dirty dishes into the washing bin."
"All of it important," he said. "Well, maybe not James's broken plates, but Sam's message. Okay, I won't start in again. We've talked it out."
"I don't think," she said slowly, "that we can ever talk it out. It's too big."
"But not tonight," he said,
kissed her, and left. Tonight, George would have to do without his sounding board. Trevor had spent the day with him, and Carol had spent it orienting the new surgeon to the surgical team, Lisa Cummings. Short, brisk, radiating confidence, but not arrogance, Dr. Cummings had asked all the right questions. Carol liked her. But for tonight, Carol and Trevor had agreed on a vacation from anything to do with the compound. And since they still couldn't leave without being besieged by reporters and implorers and general nutcases outside the gate, the vacation would happen right here in Carol's room as soon as they returned from dinner in the refectory. Tonight was going to be free of any talk that wasn't playful or sexy, even though the occasion was a celebration of her decision to stay on at the compound. Carol could hardly believe she'd agreed to another year at the project. But even harder to believe was that she could leave without Trevor, and without deciding, once and for all, the truth about the primacy of the Observer. What could be more important than learning what reality was, what she herself was, what death was, or was not? Her world had been shaken to its bedrock by five dots of Morse code. And somehow, the shaking had left her feeling more alert, more aware of everything around her, more real, new. Would anyone at Fairleigh Memorial even recognize this new Carol? Memory was unchanged. All those years of internship and residency and surgical fellowship, of Ellen and her children. But she had stepped off the path those years were supposed to lead to. The path she had laid down for herself, and onto one as unknown and mysterious and terrifying as if marked, "Here be dragons."
"You seem different," Barbara had said.
"More, I don't know,
more alive."
"I do?"
"Yes. Ain't love grand?"
It was said playfully, but the look Barbara gave her was thoughtful, as if Barbara knew that it was more than love that had changed Carol. It was hard to not tell Barbara about the five dots, but Carol kept her promise to Julian and said nothing. Yet Barbara must have had an inkling, because she glanced across the refectory at Weigert, absently eating his lunch, as if he had no idea that his hand was conveying food to his mouth.
"Look at him," Barbara said softly, "just sitting there, the man who's challenging the scientific world."
Carol looked instead at Barbara, practical, calm Barbara, whose tone had just revealed a flash of a quality Carol had not realized her friend possessed, a capacity for profound wonder. Maybe Carol didn't understand anybody. Ellen, Lorraine, Julian, even Trevor. They had all revealed themselves to be more layered than she'd known. Her phone rang. James said,
"Doctor, that case of expensive wine that Dr. Abruzzo ordered just arrived, and he's not answering his phone. If he's there, will you tell him to come get it right away, before those software techs?"
He said the two words as if they were demon spawn. Go and smash that, too?
I'll tell him. Thank you, James.
She called to Trevor, just leaving Wing One, with James's message. Trevor grinned and disappeared under the archway between the courtyards of Wings 1 and 2. Carol went back into her room, leaving the door open. The room felt stuffy in the late afternoon heat. A tiny green lizard ran across her bedroom floor, but she had learned to just ignore lizards. They were ubiquitous, like social media. Carol never looked at Twitter and all the rest, but Ellen still sent her links constantly. Reality check, all over every site. Look at this one, read by over 1 million people. Devon said he was sorry Carol wasn't applying for the open position at Fairleigh, but he understood completely. Not true. Since the five dots, not even George understood anything completely. Another lizard followed the first. Was this an invasion? No. The lizard turned and ran back out the door. An email from Ellen, with an attached drawing from Kayla. Hi, Aunt Caro. This is a picture of me, Fluffy, Mom, and Dan. Write me back. Your friend, Kayla Kemp. Kayla was much better at drawing than spelling. The picture showed a detailed and recognizable Kayla in shorts and a ruffled purple top, Fluffy holding a squeak toy in her mouth, Ellen barefoot in a sundress, and a tall blonde man with a beard. Ellen and the man were holding hands. Well. A third lizard darted inside. Caro caught it, threw it outside, and started to shut the door. The gorgeous waning of the day lured her onto the walkway, its cement cool under her bare feet. The sky flamed with color that would be gone in a few more minutes with the swift tropical sunset. The grass must have been freshly cut, its fragrance mingled with flowers, and that indefinable promise of a summer night. The walkway lights turned on, and she saw a figure rushing toward her across the courtyard. George.
Caroline, another letter from Dr. Fournier.
George, stay under the walkway.
Trevor, his arms around a large crate balanced against his chest, emerged from Wing 2.
Blat, blat, blat!
The alarm filled the courtyard, the sky, the world, part of the new alert system Julian had installed to detect drones. George, remarkably nimble for a man his age, darted back toward the covered walkway. The alarm allowed 20 seconds after drone detection, Julian had said. Trevor, with the wine, moved back under the wooden arch over the gate. There were not 20 seconds. There was not a drone. The missile hit the archway and exploded. For a moment, Caro, already running toward Trevor, couldn't see through smoke and flying debris, couldn't hear anything except splintering wood and shattering glass and someone screaming. A pressure wave knocked her off her feet, and fragments of something slammed into her lower body. She cried out at the pain, but kept going, crawling over more fragments toward Trevor.
Let it be him screaming. Let him still be alive.
By the time she reached him, he was dead. Then other people were there. Other people were...
Who? Doing what?
It didn't matter. Trevor's mangled body lay in a pool of blood, wine, metal fragments, shards of glass. Caro crouched beside him, and she knew that the terrible sound filling the air was coming from her. Hands pulled at her, moving her away to safety. Why? There was no safety. There was only Trevor, dead, under a sky rapidly turning dark, all color fading from the world. Gone. She was hit too, someone said, which made no sense, because of course she was hit. She was shattered. She was in pieces. Trevor was dead.
Was a fucking missile.
Get out of the open. Hit in the head.
Went right through the...
Words. Just words. Then more words. Hands on her. Abrasions and lacerations, someone said. Blood in her hair. She was under a walkway. She was being half pushed,
half-guided away from Trevor.
Leave me alone!
She broke free and ran back to Trevor's body, took his pulse, tried to begin CPR.
Caroline, someone said gently,
and she was being lifted by George's surprisingly strong arms. Somewhere, sirens sounded.
Come away, my dear.
I have to help him.
You can't. Caroline, come with me.
She didn't move, but she sobbed against George's chest, this father who had come too late. The smell of wine and smoke filled the air. George was moving her away from Trevor, but this time she went. The courtyard was full of people. She was sitting somewhere, sitting on a chair.
I might like Louis Quatorze.
And then she was fighting to not lie down. So they sat her in a different chair, large and orange. And Ralph, no, not Ralph, the new surgeon, her name was gone, was examining Caro's head, parting her hair carefully with gentle fingers. And the world turned sharp and clear and terrible as razors hidden in sweet apples. She pushed the doctor away.
I'm not hurt. Julian! Where's Julian? I want Julian now.
I'm here, Caro.
Suddenly he loomed over her, Julian, who had warped and saved and manipulated her life, who had brought her Trevor.
You had to bargain with Julian.
If she'd learned anything here in this compound, she'd learned that, and only bargaining would get her back to Trevor. She made her voice clear and cold.
I want to be implanted. Now. This minute. No one spoke. The silence stretched on and on, stretched to the end of the time that did not exist.
Did you hear me? I want to be implanted now.
I'm not seriously hurt, and I'm in my right mind. Do it.
And to the new surgeon.
Scrub, send for Molly.
Caro, Julian finally said, we can discuss this a little later. Right now the entire compound is...
Now!
Caro said, and as soon as she stood up from the orange chair, the pain hit.
Her abdomen. Excruciating.
On a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 no pain and 10,
12, 15,
she managed to say,
bleeding into capsule, around spleen, implant me.
Then it all went dark. She woke, and someone said,
give her more.
More what? Pain smothered her. Then a mask came down over her face, and before she went under again, and through the fog of inarticulate pain, 2 letters came to her.
O.R. She was in an operating room, and...
Caro opened her eyes. White. The ceiling was white. She tried to sit up and could not. There was pain, but now it felt distant. A fourth cousin. She couldn't move her head, but someone reached for her hand. Molly's face swarmed into view.
Caro?
Where?
What?
I could tell you, but you wouldn't remember. Molly was wrong. Caro remembered everything. It came in a rush, and she opened her eyes wide.
Trevor! He's gone. You know he's gone, Caro. But you're here, in recovery. Rest now.
Caro gasped.
Implant me.
The third time she woke, it was for real. Ellen sat by her bedside, looking at her phone. When Caro's eyes opened, Ellen dropped the phone and grabbed Caro's arm.
Sissy, how do you feel?
Caro couldn't process the question. She said,
where? Julian.
I'll get him. Ellen disappeared, and Camilla took her place. Caro said,
implant me.
Camilla looked at her, a long moment in which Caro knew herself to be examined to the bottom of her soul. Then Camilla turned her gaze to the monitors,
and Caro became aware that she was in the ICU, that she had tubes and needles and electrodes on her body, and that Camilla was not Julian. Only Julian could give the order to have her implanted. Except, Lisa Cummings appeared before Camilla had to explain to Caro what she already knew. Lisa said, "You'll want to know what I did, Caro. You..."
"I want implant."
Dr. Cummings's eyes were compassionate. "You just had abdominal surgery. I don't think you could survive another operation in your present condition. You lost a lot of blood, bleeding from the spleen. It had accumulated in your abdominal cavity until the spleen ruptured. When I opened you up, it was a tidal wave. We weren't sure if you would survive, and the prognosis is still uncertain. You're just barely hanging on."
"Want implant?"
"I'm telling you the facts, doctor, because it's right that you know how..."
"My decision!"
"It's not," another voice said, and Julian was there. "Caro, you're too weak to survive the operation. And if Trevor were here, he wouldn't want you to take the risk." Fury washed through Caro, using Trevor, playing the angles till the end. Was Julian thinking how bad it would look if Reality Check killed one of its surgeons? Caro said, all too aware that her thoughts flowed better than her speech.
"My decision."
"Actually, it's not," Julian said. "You're not capable right now of making that decision. Maybe later you can be implanted, but right now, and in the absence of a signed health proxy..."
Ellen said, "I have it here, in my purse." Julian's head swiveled around so fast that it looked as if it might ricochet. Caro found, startled, that she was too weak to turn her own head. But she heard the snap as Ellen opened her purse, the rustle of a paper that Caro must have signed years ago, given to her sister, and forgotten.
"Ellen,"
Julian said in his most persuasive tone,
"you have to realize that..."
"Implant her,"
Ellen said, in a granite voice that Caro would not, but should have, thought her sister capable of. It was their mother's voice. "What I have here is a..." Ellen paused, resuming in the voice of someone reading aloud. "A durable power of attorney for healthcare. Implant Caro. She wants to see Trevor again as soon as she can. She has to know he's there."
Julian said, "Lisa, isn't this your call? Medical concerns can override that paper."
Dr. Cummings said, unhappily, "A durable power of attorney for healthcare is a pretty powerful legal instrument, but yes, a physician can refuse to comply with it if the doctor has an objection of conscience or if the treatment is medically inappropriate."
Julian said, "There, Caro, you must see that. I'm sorry, but it's not a good idea right now for you to..."
"But," Dr. Cummings said, "I don't have an objection of conscience, and, given the circumstances, the treatment is not medically inappropriate."
Julian turned on her. "Not medically inappropriate? How can you say the..."
"Julian, we discussed all this before you hired me. You explained Samuel Watkins's situation and why implanting him was his choice despite the great risk. You hired me over the other candidates precisely because I agreed with the philosophy that the patient's wishes should be supreme, not those of a doctor playing God. Caro is mentally capable of making this decision. Her sister has a durable power of attorney for healthcare, and medically inappropriate hardly applies, given that nothing we are doing in this compound is dictated by a medical need. Nothing. I will do the implant as soon as her condition stabilizes a bit more." She didn't know how much time had passed, or where she was, but then, time and space didn't really exist, did they? Did she exist? Only intermittently, flickering in and out of consciousness. They had existed, The OR had existed, and her ability to speak had existed. She had spoken to people, to Julian, to Ellen, to Molly, who later, how much later, sat beside her in the OR. Those things existed until they no longer did, and she barely did either. Only one thing penetrated that fog of flickering self. Trevor no longer existed. Did he? Someone. Who? Saying to someone else. Who? She survived the implant surgery. Then those words, too, slipped away, and Carol went on shifting into light and dark. Dim light, dusky dark, nothing else, flickering back and forth.